Let the vibes come through. time or place.
Still sounding good. Cameo. Attack me with your love. Hey, welcome. Hey, this is Studio W, The Buzz, your global radio network. And it's time for that show, the Soul Savvy Show, every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 7 o'clock on the East and 6 Central. And welcome. This is Q, Lynn, and EB. Hey, gang, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, Will?
Hey.
We have a special guest. Well, we gotta get started. Thank you, Will, for that introduction. I appreciate that.
No problem.
You always come in with the energy. I love that because I need that at this moment. But we good. It's cold here in Chicago. We good though.
Oh man, Chicago. Yeah, oh Lord. And how is it in New York, EB? But,
it's cold and rainy, but I like the cold and I like the rain, so I'm happy.
Well, it's warm and 80 degrees out here in Southern California, so you guys have fun.
Yes. I think we have a special guest on. This man is, head of the first priority music. Music executive is his history in the music game is so long, and I just want to just, you know, he's worked with so many great music executives from Barry West, Rick Rubin, the list goes on and on. But I just want to introduce y'all. We have a line, Mr. Nat Robinson. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, how are you?
Good. They got the
We have a little static. I think it's cleared up.
Yeah. How are you doing? How are you doing today?
Good.
Thank you so much for coming on Post Athens Radio Show. We appreciate
it. Excited to be with you.
Oh, yes. I have so many questions, but I want to get, I like to do like this genesis with the guest, and I call it like a musical genesis thing. I want to get into like your knowledge of music, and I guess how it pertained in your childhood, you, like your relationship with music growing up. What was that like?
Well, I grew up, since I was a small kid, I always wanted to be a songwriter, which that never happened, but that was my dream. But I did get into the music business. I grew up during the Motown time. And I followed Motown, and I listened to Smokey, and I thought he was a great writer, but I wasn't a great writer. And, you know, here I am. I went into engineering early in my career. I was an engineer for IBM. And when I left IBM, I actually went into concerts. And from concerts, I went into club business. And from the club business, the music business.
What was there anything particular, like, I guess, in your young, when was it where you knew, like you said, you followed the Motown, that legacy, what was it in particular? Was it like a certain age you were that you like, okay, I'm going to be in the music industry? Or
about 12 years old. And back in the day, you know, they had these cons where you could write a song and you could send it in and for $10, and they say, yeah, your song is accepted. Now you got to give us $50 and we'll send you back a demo of your song. But, you know, kid 12 years old, those days you didn't have $50, so it just couldn't happen, you know. But I did send the 10 in, and I did, but they told everybody that your writings was accepted, and they told everybody that they would do a demo for them, you know. This is just some company you found in one of the magazines.
So whenever you said your writing, it was, you were wanting to be a writer. What was it in particular like? What was it? Okay, was it just like I'm gonna do this by any means necessary? You just wanted to be like in any part of the music industry. So songwriting.
My ambition really was to be a songwriter. I grew up under Smokey Robinson, and I was just amazed by his ability to write so many different songs for so many different people. So I guess at that age I wanted to be Smokey Robinson, you know. But you know, that wasn't my destiny. And so I guess I wound up where I was supposed to be, but in the music business. And I know everything that there is about writing, even though I don't write. I know everything about publishing, even though I'm not a writer.
So who's your like Mount Rushmore's of like songwriting to you? You said
Smokey
Robinson. What's your other three?
There are so many. Now, you know, you want today or back in the day?
Just any, like your top, like your all time. Like if somebody said, like these are your four Mount Rushmores of songwriting. Like who would you say? Like unequivocally, like that's it for me.
You know, there's Neo in this day and age.
Oh, wow.
You have, oh God, I just see so many of them that really, really can write. You have Stargate, that are great writers. You have, Sam Smith. You have Normani. It's just so many of these people right now that are just amazing writers. Smokey and a lot of people over, at Motown were writers. Ashford and Simpson, they were great writers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it just goes on and on and on. It was just so many of them.
And you're a former corporate executive, you said, at IBM and RCA.
Yes.
You honed that skills. What was it? Is there anything, any lessons you learned from that, or was it all, like, I guess, positive lessons you got from those experiences? What was it in particular that you learned from being there?
I was very young when I went into to IBM. Then we had, in those days, a program called Affirmative Action. So companies that didn't have minorities in their company couldn't get government contracts. So the big companies ran out and tried to snatch up all the ethnic kids that were tech. I was a tech person. And, yes, IBM, they really taught me a lot. They always had, it was so, we were so programmed at a very young age. I would, you know, you would go into the men's room and over the urinal, in the tiles, there was a word, and the word said think. When you sat down at your desk, on the back of your nameplate, it said think. Everything in IBM was think. And there's another term they use, if you don't plan, plan to fail. They programmed us. We were very young. So we were like 17 and 18 years old in there. So we followed them. But they taught us marketing. They taught us management. When you spend a few years there, when you come out, you're a totally different person. You understand what it's about. And you learn, if you don't plan, you plan to fail. You know you have to think. They programmed us, but it wasn't a bad programming.
And I guess getting into, because you're the founder CEO of First Priority Music.
Yes.
In terms of your role, what is it in particular that you look for, like your staff, like in terms of like the artists that are on your label, what's the, like, the main point? Is it like for those different artists to have their own identity, or is it like a formula for the artists to follow, or is it just, okay, we're going to get the marketing, we're going to get this done, and incorporating social media and all the stuff that artists need to, I guess, for their fans to engage with them. What is it that you look for in terms of the First Priority Music label from your staff, in terms of the hip-hop artists you're on?
What we try to do, we don't want to change the artist. We want to follow the lead of the artist. If the artist has a certain style and it hasn't been done yet, like when we did MC Light, MC Light was totally unique and different. That was legacy back in the day. You don't go out and say, okay, I want to change this person. A lot of labels do that. They say, well, we don't like the way you speak or you sing or you rap. You have to change it. We don't change it. We try to adjust our marketing to them. Because an artist that's not really enjoying their creativity will become a sour artist over a period of time. So you let them do what they want to do, and we adjust rather than having them adjust. And that's
right.
The only way we know how to do it, because everybody's different. It's like, we're not in a classroom of 30 kids and the teacher's telling everybody they have to do the same thing. No, artists have to do what they love and what they are. And if you don't do that, you're going to destroy them, and you don't want to destroy the artist. So we let them do whatever they want to do. Which is there. We say, okay, why are you doing this? Where do you want to present this new lyrics? What demographics? What social media platform do you want to put this out on? And then we'll get their information, then we go talk to the pros, and we let the pros hear it, our people, and say, okay, this is what we need to do with this. We need to start this certain situation. Let's start this in Europe and bring it back. Let's start it in the United States and take it to Europe. But now, since it's become global, we hit the global community with a push of a button now. So it's not done by territory 1, 2, 3, 4. It's done instantly. So what's going to happen when you do this instant thing? You will get the, metrics back and all the information, how many people are following this and how many aren't. So you, it's easy for you to look at a new song or rap and say, oh, this got legs immediately. Let's go to phase two. This didn't get legs. We got to push this harder until this get legs. And then we go to phase two. Do we have the budget? Yes, we do, because we planned that out before we hit the pavement. So the kids are in a very sweet situation, more so today, because they can grasp that international market and a push of a button. You might be in America, and America might say, oh, we're not feeling that. Oh, but Australia loves it. Oh, they want you to go to Dubai and Abu Dhabi, go to India, to Mumbai. So a touch of the button tells you where your fans are in the world. And that's beautiful. It's a different game totally.
And just to go back a little bit, talk about finding the uniqueness in artists. You talked about MC Light was one of my favorites. Her first album, Light Us a Lot. Was it under Atlantic?
Yeah, Atlantic was the distributor of it, yeah.
Right.
We did it all.
Right, exactly. What was it just, because I know, like, during that time period, the female MC, like, her voice is so distinctive, and I feel like I read or watched different interviews where she said that she was working with people on, you know, her voice, the projection, I should say. What was it? Was it, like, did it come before then? What did it take in terms of getting, I guess, her records on the radio? Was it just the belief, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to do that? What was it that sort of that the marketing factor in getting her records on the radio to people to listen to? Was it, like, an easy thing to do, or was it harder?
It was very hard, you know, and we didn't have a digital platform in those days. And we didn't have radio stations that played hip hop music in their regular daytime shows. So what we had to do, only music that was being played on the radio that was hip hop was from the mix DJs at night, 12 midnight. You know, they played their mixes. So you had to actually go out and talk to them. So in New York, you know, we had to go harass Red Alert. We had to go harass Chill Out. We had to go check Marley Marl, Hank Love, go to all the colleges and promote that record. So it was really difficult. But you had to call all the mixed DJs around the country. Introduce yourself, get to know them, ask them to play the record. And so you would pick it up by state in America. We got the tri-state area. Oh, great. Then we got Richmond, Virginia, El Bravador. Wow. Then we went to K-Day, which is a radio station in L.A., which was had become the only station in America that played hip-hop music 24 hours a day.
Right, exactly.
So we got K-Day. Then we got Chicago. And then we got Ohio. And then we got Houston, Texas. So we were just... all over the place. So once we did the deal with Sylvia Rhone, and they brought us in, they put everything in play with their distribution. So we were in every state in America, then they took us to the global market. But it was still territory by territory. So that process could take 6 months, 7 months to get it there. Like that, compared to what we're doing now. So
right.
It was a hustle. I have a good one to tell you.
Oh, go ahead. I'm ready for it. Go ahead.
Okay. Red Alert, I had a record, but that wasn't Light. This was Milk. It was called Top Billing. So I go to Red. Red, you got to play this record, Top Billing. I'm not playing that record. Okay. I give him a record. I start walking across the club. I see him in the booth. He starts telling me, no, I go, you got to take this record. I'm not going to play it. So this went on for a while. So one day he played it, and we became really good friends. And he told me, he says, do you know I have a case of Top Billing records at home? I have about 50 records in a box. This is when we had vinyl. Mm. I gave him 50 records before I got him to play it. So, hey, you just can't give up.
I was going to ask, it's like, I watched certain things, and then I read L.A. Reid's book, and he was, like, candid about certain artists of records that he either had or it got shelved. Was it, like, any artist, or is it any record that, like, you didn't believe, or was it a hit record, or have you ever came from that perspective of, like, oh, I know this is a hit record or whatever, or was it just, like, you just feel it that it's a good record, and is there ever been, like, one that you haven't, like, oh, I don't think this is it, and it, or, you know, vice versa?
No, I always believed in it. One thing we did a little different than we do now, we have a dynamic young A&R guy now. His name is Jonathan Michael. He is an A&R guy. Back in the day, we didn't have any A&R guys. We had 12 people working, at that time a dozen, and everybody that worked in First Priority could bring in the act they wanted to bring in. And then we'd all sit down and say, that's dope, or that's not. And the staff was the A&R. So we had no one individual that made a decision or brought in the music. Everybody, from Kathy, that was light security, female security, she brought in a group. And, oh, that group is, that's hype, that's dope, let's do it. So, no, it was just, it was a family type thing, and
okay, like a team effort.
And they believe.
Right.
Yes, the team area effort. Yes. And
wow.
Which we don't do now, I'll be honest. But you know, that's how
right. Yeah, that's all I'm saying. I was like, because that's like kind of abnormal. That's what I was like.
Yeah, exactly.
With the temperament
exactly.
In the yeah, right.
Yeah.
I just had a oh, go ahead.
Yeah, but what happens is it makes the group tighter. Because no one person's making the decision. And they would bring, and these were all kids at that time. And this was their music and their time. So they knew what was hot and what was not, you know. So they would bring, we missed some stuff. Tone Loc sent us a demo. We missed that. We didn't get it. We didn't understand it. It was L.A., and we was not really, we were in New York. We didn't know L.A. style.
Right, yeah, that's like party music. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
So everybody's like, funk. Nobody.
Nah. Yeah, y'all wasn't feeling funky Cold Medina at the time.
But we felt it later when we missed it.
Right.
And we also, Maxwell, we missed Maxwell.
Oh!
Maxwell. But he wasn't doing. He was doing dance music at that time,
right? Yeah. You didn't know what I was going to get into. I was going to talk about, like, because I know, like, his record, like, they Columbia. I said it on the show before that they actually shelved his first album, his debut album. They shelved it for like 2 years actually a year. They shelved it until D'Angelo's Brown Sugar came out. Then they could market it like, oh, this is what this is and whatever, and that's when that whole
yeah.
Neo, you know, quotation mark, Neo Soul thing happened. But
what
was that? Talk about that a little bit more. I want to know more about that.
We had the same accountant, Howard Comart, and Howard sent me the music. But it was really dance music. We wasn't doing dance music. It was a hip-hop label.
Right.
I said, well, this is dance music. I really don't know what to do with dance music, you know, at that point. So, you know, it didn't go any further with us. And next time I heard Maxwell, he was blowing up the radio waves, you know. It was like, oh, my God, we blew it. But we didn't blow it. He changed. He was into dance music when he sent us that demo. And I guess the years after, he changed his direction with the need to soul music, you know? And that's when we really heard him. We didn't blow it because we didn't know if he would have sent us this, what he has right now, we would have jumped on it, you know?
Right. It'll change the whole trajectory of the 3 hour going, right?
Right, right. But you know, it's a great feeling. I think the greatest thing in the world, and I still haven't lost that, is when you have a song and you put it out and you give it to a radio station and you get in your car and you're driving and you hear your record come over the radio. There's nothing greater than that. You go, wow. And it can happen 100 times and you get that same feeling each time. And you start to say, wow, we're on our way with that record. So radio plays such a part in this whole game that, you know, you have to just lean back and say, wow. You call everybody, turn on whatever station the record is being played. Or you hear it, you're walking down the street and you hear the kids in their cars and you hear your record on the radio. You go, oh, my God. So that's a great feeling. When radio plays your record and you hear it, but you hear it for the first time on a radio station, and that's amazing. I know the average person doesn't think that way, but when you've been there and you've been nurturing this baby and you took it from an incubation stage and boom, right, it's there and it's being played. Oh my God, that's it. You know, that's it. And anybody will tell you that worked in a record company. It's like you guys go by. Some champagne or something, you go back to the office just because you heard it on the radio one time. Because you know at that point it has legs. And you know it's gonna start building and building and building.
With the marketing, I think it's the same. I think it's the equivalent of I think everybody has those nostalgia moments, when you hear it, if you are of the era where, you know, you listen to songs on the radio during that time, in your childhood, you listen to it and it's it takes you, I know for me, it takes me back to okay, I know when I first heard, listening to Light as a Rock album, I know exactly where I was when I heard that album. My uncle had it on cassette tape, I remember that, the whole thing or whatever, so it's that constant, mm-hmm. replay of nostalgia, so I get 100% what you're saying. Well, I was going to talk about with MC, what she does now, with her voice, her voice was not even just her cadence and her flow on the record, it was her voice, I think, stood out the most, the unique quality of her music was her voice to me.
Yeah.
And I love now seeing it, the relevance of what her legacy is still today. I still think it's still evolving and growing to where she used her voice and used it in different different areas of the entertainment business, radio and television, you know, here, on almost every, award show, BET award show, she's doing, the voiceovers and, different areas of that. What is it about? Or what can you attribute that to? Is that just sort of the label's decision or when she was going at it, or is that just a personal,
individual. That's who she is. Yeah, that's who she is. Here's the situation. Do you know who Milk is from Audio 2?
Yeah, I know that. Okay. Yeah.
So, in the beginning, I was shopping Light and Milk. Everywhere I went, every record label, they would tell me Milk's voice was too high and Light's voice was too deep.
Wow!
Okay? So, I was
going
to the thing. Very crazy. I got
really that image of that is crazy. Somebody saying that's weird. But go ahead. It took me off a little bit.
Yeah. The only person that didn't say that was Sylvia Rose at Atlantic.
Right.
But they all told me but here's the thing. If you listen very closely sometimes to Milk and Light when they do a record together, it's very hard to tell the difference between them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. Yes. Oh, my gosh. You're blowing my brains right now. That is, man, you have it.
That, yeah.
We all
so,
say,
I mean, whew. They would call me on the phone sometime, and I have to stop for a second to see which one I'm talking to. Is that Light or is that Milk? Because Milk's mm-hmm. voice got a little deeper.
Yeah.
So their voices are, and they both have that raspiness in it. But getting back to what you said, no, this is who she is. This is how she came in. She refines her voice and she projects her voice. As you grow, you have to, build what you have. But when she was young, she just walked out the box. That was her, right out the box. Have you seen these, God, I can't think of the name of these young kids are doing these, on YouTube. They're, evaluating, old videos. They just evaluate. They put an old school video on and they do a review on it. Okay? Right in place.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. It's like different, networks or that's associated with YouTube.
Right.
They do like reviews or
right.
whatever.
But these are kids that don't even know the music from the old days. So I watched, a guy do it on Roughneck just a couple of weeks ago. And he's sitting there, oh man, he doesn't even know who she is.
Wow.
This girl is hot. She's fire. Da 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 da. And I'm just sitting there looking at him. He said, "Now this girl, this is." I was just sitting there like,
"She gonna make it, man? What is it? It's 20 years, man. And she ain't gonna be. She gonna be number one out here.
Yeah, she's gonna
this
be
the next one. And then I heard Rock Neck. This is the joke.
Yeah,
wow.
She's fire. She's fire." So it's really funny when you sit back and you watch that on YouTube. They,
right.
These kids don't know the artist, but
right.
they're reviewing their videos.
So they 25 plus weight in years. Yeah.
So their voices are similar. When they do something together or used to do something together, it was. The voices were so similar. They redid Top Billing one time with both of them. It was mind blowing to hear their voices together. But still, as raspy and deep as her voice can be, it's still feminine. It's still a woman. And that's right. what takes her all the way. And yes, she went into acting, of course. She studied and she learned how to project. But you never forget her voice. If you're watching a show and she said, we'll be back in one minute, you know who it is, even if nobody says
it. Right. Yes.
So, yes, she has a very unique voice, and I think, and not only that, a unique writer.
Yes.
I mean, some of those things she writes, like, it's insane some of the things she just wrote, and you listen to the lyrics, you go, oh, okay, you know. How did she get that in her mind and put it out there like that? So it's dope. It's good. Good.
Just one more insight question. What in just over like the span of her career? What is it? Is there anything particular with an album in terms of like maybe promotion? Do you ever think back like, oh, we could have promoted this more or anything related to that? Or did you think?
No, we over promoted everything. Some of the stuff we did. I would go out and buy a buy records, you know, before we were at Atlantic. Go buy records $1 a piece. We'll buy 5,000, cost us $5,000. We'll give those 5,000 records away at clubs or CDs, whatever they would be. We put people out at the clubs and try to give it away. I'll tell you what's really, really great. Luke Skywalker in Florida. We were talking one day, and I was saying, yeah, you know, I'm using these things as promos. Well, see, once I went to Sylvia, we got like 500, you know, automatically, just promos. But, you know, putting that stuff out was crazy. So it was so beautiful in those days. He tells me, Luke tells me, hey, I can get you that stuff done for 40 cents if you're doing it in Florida. I said, really? He said, yeah. So all of a sudden, I'm receiving records coming in for 40 cents instead of $1 a piece. So it made us, we had more tools. We over promoted everything. But what has to be remembered, we were so at the beginning. We weren't the first, but we were at the beginning of hip hop. So you lost a big percentage of your marketing. You know, you're hitting everybody, but everybody wasn't accepting it.
Right.
It was a hard sell. I would take like set up for stuff for the USO. That was amazing promotion. We go out, hit those young boys all over the world, Korea, Italy, all over Europe, Germany. We go do the USO shows. And these kids are getting out of the military maybe within the next 6 months. They're going home. Now they know who MC Light is. And this is one thing she did. If we had, and this is no exaggeration, if we were there with 1,000 soldiers or Marines, depending where we are, on a ship, she would sign a picture on every 1,000 of those kids. If it's 2,000, she would sit there and sign 2,000 pictures.
Wow.
And so, talking about marketing, we overdid it. And that's how I believe almost everybody in the industry that was out there overdid it, and I think that's why we survived. Everybody was overdoing
right.
marketing.
And that's the thing. I just think that initiative that y'all took, like you talking about when you said earlier, like when she hit, like y'all hit all the, you know, went to New York, you hit the East Coast, and then worked your way from the back left, Midwest, West Coast,
right.
like really hitting those cities. And I think that work ethic, I think with that, with the passion, that's what kept it going, the marketing and the promotion. And I think that a lot of, if you kind of look at it from the viewpoint of now, I don't really see, like, the newer artists wanting to, tour and stuff like that and hit, like, cities that they may or may not have been familiar with before to try to reach a new audience. What do you think, from that viewpoint of how y'all, is that still the same objective of, okay, we're going to start from this city and work this city or whatever promotion? I know social media helps with the promotion as well, but in terms of, because I still think touring is still the most, I think that the engagement, I feel like that's still the thing, because when you look at the artists that are like doing it now, like they have the groundwork, like Anderson .Paak, Lizzo, like those artists, like I've seen them work in shows, and so it's like they put the work in, and then when they finally got the team together and they got the right people around them, that's when it went to a whole new level. So what is it in terms of the record label that you're doing now with artists in terms of the promotion? Is it still that same passion of, okay, we need to work this, like, tours and stuff like that? Is that the same goal?
Same thing.
Wow.
You know, after you've been in the game as long as I have, you know, you can pick up the phone and you can call major promoters in Europe and say, hey, I got this artist. Can we open for you? I took a kid I had named Eamon also, and I got him on the Britney Spears tour to open up, and that's when she broke her ankle or something like that. And we didn't, but I got it. I called everybody I knew until I could get her on that show. We got Light on the Janet Jackson show to open. You just have to go in there and fight, and say, hey, let me be the one that opens the show for you. We'll get Light to open the show. We'll get Eamon to open the show. Whoever the artist was at that time. And here's another part that really helped. Top Billing, this is going off on Milk, Top Billing has been sampled at 285 times.
Oh.
So, you know, it's sampled by Lady Gaga, by Jay-Z and Kanye. The first sample was Real Love with Mary J. Blige. I Get Money, 56. Everybody.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah.
So that gave us hip hop now into songs.
Right.
Hip hop lyrics going into real people's songs, like Lady Gaga. You know, Wale's chilling, Lady Gaga's chilling, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So that did help us get another step into the industry and into to the public. The public there. So recently I was reading something or listening to something. They were telling us number one music, pop, number two was rock, and number three was hip hop. But now they say number one is pop.
Right.
Number two is hip hop.
Right.
So we're right under the top, you know, if we could ever take down pop, we'll be number one, you know.
Right.
Yeah, but it's a glorious thing, and you're really blessed that you can actually have that experience in life and look back. But get back to what you had said. The marketing today is similar. I've seen guys take the little computer sticks and they put their music on it. And instead of giving away records like we did CDs, they're giving those little sticks away.
But
the kids are now going home, plugging that into your USB, and they have the album. It's a lot of marketing is still going on. The kids are getting amazing. Here's the situation. Milk and Light used to work at a club called the Latin Quarters in New York. That was the only hip-hop venue we really had. And a few other places, small places. They were getting paid $500 a show. Okay? We did a kid called Eamon. He blew up 26 countries. A little white kid that was like a rapper type guy, but he was a singer. And his first show, he got paid $25,000. Dude, you know, all the guys are grown now and they're doing other things, so they're fine. But they said, can you believe we got $500 back in the day? For us to make $2,000 a weekend, we had to do four shows.
Right.
And this kid comes out day one and makes $25,000. It's what happens in the business, you know? Now the kids are getting paid. Their money is made from merchandising and doing shows. It's not, the money is not coming from streaming. Streaming is microsales. So you may have a million streams and maybe you get $2,000 out of that. But
right.
Streams is just a great marketing tool, but it's not a way you're going to make a fortune.
Exactly. And I think, yeah, it's some, like I said, those artists that I named, they, you know, do the social media. They have the Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, but I still think it's something when people want to pay for you live. Like when people want to pay to see you, like that's still a big deal. And I still think that's like the number one. I feel if anything, because with that, you got the merchandise, people going like buy the shirts. You know, when they get to go to the concert, they're going to have whoever artist they like, they're going to have it on them. And then if they're going to buy more merch, they got it, you know, on the spot, like when you get ready to walk out, they got it all up there for you to get. So I still think, like you said, like it's way different now, you know, in terms of the pay, the venues and all that stuff. But you go ahead, PB, my co-host.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm enjoying, like, the conversation is so good right now. Like, I've feel like I'm talking to a bona fide legend. I've been a fan of Audio 2's like forever. So I'm gonna go back just a little bit. I never got this story quite right, and I want you to, you know, let me know if I'm right. So you started Club Trap Becca first, right? Before the music, yeah.
Right.
So you started this club and now, what I've heard is you started First Priority just as a way for your sons, for Giz and Milk, to,
right.
You know, as
exactly.
a vehicle for their music. Is that what is true?
That's 100%. Because what I did was they came to me and said, Dad, you know, we want to do this rap thing. I said, well, you know, I know Russell because he used to come to the club. He brought Curtis Blow. Actually, Curtis Blow was the only hip-hop artist that played in my club in those days. We wasn't playing hip-hop. We were doing more pop dance music in those days.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Russell would come in and Curtis. I actually spoke to Curtis about 2 or 3 months ago. You know, he was, you know, under some surgery and he came out very well. So I just, you know, called him and said, you know, congratulations, everything worked out for you. But so I got a meeting with Russell. I called Russell. He said, cool. So I sent the guys up there. Well, Milk and King of Chill, right now they call, you know, he works with Premier and he's called Creepy Clown now, but he was called King of Chill. And they went to Russell's office. Russell was in a meeting. So they sat there, hour went by, 3 hours went by, 4 hours. They got mad, they left. So they said, I said, well, you're supposed to stay there all day till the office closed. You don't leave. If you're hungry, talk to the receptionist, order yourself a sandwich. You know, don't leave. So eventually, it got to the point, I told them this. I said, look, show me some real stuff that's hot, and I'll think about starting a label. And they went out, I bought Milk and Giz, like $1,000 worth of equipment, which was, you know, nothing, a Tascam 247 or something like that, a foot sampler. And he made the record. He made the record top billing. Daddy-O came in, helped him out, straightened it out. If you, because you understand this, if you really listen to Top Dylan, you'll see he was so young, I think he was only like 13, 14 years old then, that Daddy-O had to like put music behind certain parts because the verses wasn't the same.
And
you know, it wasn't the same. So Daddy-O filled in those, that the next bars with just music, you know. because he was a real kid. He wasn't really a producer at that point. But you know, they gave me the record. He did a record, a Christmas record once, which, you know, he doesn't want to talk about, but you know, he did it. And then we did a song called Make It Funky.
Mm-hmm. And Top Dylan was the B-side to that, right?
Top Dylan was the B-side.
Yeah.
We put that out. As I was saying earlier, I'm walking down the street and I hear Top Dylan coming out of a car. So we realized that, oh, now Daddy-O, but be honest, Daddy-O told me, he said, Top Dylan's the song, not Make It Funky. Everybody wanted to go with Make It Funky. So I said, well, you know what? Let's do Make It Funky and we'll put Top Dylan on the B-side. So we'll lose. So it flipped to the B-side. Top Dylan was the one being played. Instantly, because we were independent, boom, we went out. Reissued Top Dylan as an A-side record and got it back out to the industry. We were talking about how a lot of people don't understand and they don't know hip-hop.
Right.
I would sample back, send to record pools back in the day. A lot of people don't know what record pools really are now. And it would go out to all the magazines. So we have blew up years that passed by. It gets to Billboard. A new kid is, you know, getting the records in, and he writes something about it. So he writes about Top Dylan. Says in Billboard, this kid on this record, Top Dylan, will never succeed. This record will never work. He lost his job. It was already a hit. It was in the
It's a staple. It's like one of the blueprints of hip hop. I mean, and it's not one of the first hip hop songs, but it came in that golden era, and like you said, it's been sampled over 200 times. I remember when 50 Cent did it for I Get Money, and Milk actually, I mean, Giz was actually on the song. And he, you know, I thought it was the hottest shit ever. He's like calling out everybody who has sampled his song. And I
That was Milk.
Milk did that. And it was just dope that he's doing that, you know, while I'm here, I like to thank. And so, okay.
Mary, Kelvin, whoever.
Yeah.
If you want to hit, use my song.
And it's true. I mean, like, everybody that he named is like it became mega hits. Like today, when you hear Mary's Real Love, the original is dope, but the remix is what sold it. Right? Exactly. It's what sold it, and it made it a classic.
Well, you know what I did back in the day? I won't name people, but there's some people that you take their sample. You really, by law, if somebody infringes on your sample, you could take the whole copyright song.
Right.
100%.
Right.
So what I typically did, Puffy, he did Real Love. He did not approach me. We knew each other. We were at a movie screening. We walk out. Puffy said, what are we going to do? I said, Puffy, you got my number. You should call me. We'll work it out. So I called. He called. We got it together. I could have took 100% of Real Love. I said, I won't do that. I did 50-50 with him. I did the same thing with I Get Money. Chris Lighty. And I was calling Chris, man, you got a record, it's blown up. We got to work out the details. I could have took 100%, but I took 50. Because I learned, if I would have did that one song, Real Love, and took 100%, nobody in the music business would ever touch that song again.
Right. Smart.
So I did 50. Yeah, you missed the mark, but I'm still here. We still can do 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we have 285 samples. Because everybody knows, even if they screw up, if they call, we'll work it out for them.
And that's so, part of just being a great businessman.
Yeah, not, you know, I mean, I wouldn't do that anyway. But number one, if you pull that off, nobody else is going to ever touch that record again.
Ever, yeah.
Ever. Dr. Dre used it. Lady Gaga just used it. Her and Wale, you know.
I mean, yeah, that's actually what happened with Betty Wright, Tonight is the Night, when Color Me Bad did it, and she went, and she got her money. Nobody's touched that song since. Because
and I won't mention, but there was a group called Taste of Honey did the same thing. They took 100% of positive. Puffy did a record for it. They took 100% of that, mm-hmm. and nobody touches those songs anymore. You know, so, if you're smart, work it out, and come on, Top Billing now has been sampled for 30 years, you know?
I mean, it's one of the greatest hip-hop songs ever now, like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, is that why, I heard right, you started this, you started First Priority for it, like, as a way of getting their music out, but is that why he says, Mom and Dad, they knew the time?
Yeah.
God! Yeah!
He was 13, 14
years old. Wow. Wow. So I'm a young cat, and my mother, that is her era. That is I was born the same year you started First Priority, so I'm named after Eric B and Rakim. She's a deep hip hop head, so Audio 2, that first album, I remember that playing like on repeat sometimes, and I was like, all right, we gotta play something else. Like, hey, we're from South Carolina. I live in New York now, but we're from South Carolina, so
South Carolina?
We're from Columbia, so.
Oh, yeah, my family's from Florence and the next city. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's crazy. Like, there was like always this, straight from New York to South Carolina connection where we got music and fashion maybe about 6 or 7 months after everybody else. Like,
right,
but it came, like,
thing.
Right, just straight down the, it was before, like, social media, so, you know, we just had to get it naturally.
Right.
When you started, First Priority, I would imagine, did you ever see it being, like, such a staple in the culture?
Okay. I would love to say yes, but I'm just real. I was not, that was not what I was trying to do. I was focused on the moment.
Mm.
And there were so many things that you had to do in the moment. You could not think that anything further. This was no more hours in the day. You just had to do what you had to do every day, every moment of the day. So, no, I did not. And then you see what happens. And once something blows up and you learn now, you understand. But if you haven't had a record that worked, you don't understand. You just can't understand. I never worked at a record company. Maybe a guy that worked at a record company would understand.
Mm-hmm.
A guy that owns a record company. But I never worked at a record company in my life. I started in the music business by buying a book, This Business Music, and reading it 5 times.
Wow.
And still miss some of the stuff, you know, you just can't get it all.
You know, so wait.
So, yeah.
You know, you went from.
I would have had that view.
Hmm? No. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I'm good.
No, for clarification purposes, you went from like corporate America, like IBM,
right,
to then opening up Club Tribeca,
right,
and then it became like the spot. Like it was the spot.
Okay, number one club in New York for a year.
Right, and not just for, like, you know, the people, but also for, like, the industry people. Like, that's where they would come. Yeah.
Yes.
So that pushed you, that led to you starting First Priority. And
right.
I can only imagine. It had to be, like you said, you were living in the moment, but it had to be just scary. Just, like,
yeah,
just stepping out on faith like that.
Well, I'm kind of, I guess I'm kind of a weirdo. don't challenge me. But if you challenge me, then I'm going to jump in the game. I never knew anything about club business. I never worked in a club in my life. And Tribeca was only maybe one of 20, 25 clubs that I had in New York. That was the most successful.
Right.
I had partnership with Restaurant Associates, which at that time had Charlie Brown's and what was the Pan Am building at the time before they changed it to the MetLife. I worked with the Reese Brothers, who had Pet Milk, and they owned all the stuff in the Empire State Building. I worked with Hilco. They owned all the stuff in the World Trade, and I took all the restaurants and turned them into clubs after hours. So that's what my partner and I did for a living after I left IBM. So, but Tribeca was the first one that was not a restaurant. We built a club from the ground up. Partners built the club. I didn't build it. And that was the first club that we had that was our real home. All the other clubs were taken from corporations. We had the Tower Suite. We had the Rainbow Room in the Empire State Building. We had Skydive in the World Trade Center. You know, just on and on and on. Like I said, and Charlie Brown's in the Pan Am Building. So we had we already built the base by the time we got to Tribeca. We had Cissoir on Murray Street down there. But that was, so we had a big following because we did so much. We did that for years. So when we landed at Tribeca, everybody came. So it wasn't easy, but we really understood that. But at that point, we stayed there until it completely faded out. My partner and I said, we haven't had a break in like 7-8 years. We're going to take a break, live life a little bit. And we never got back together. And in the meantime, I started the record label for the kids. And
wow!
And I'll tell you something ironic. I don't know if you know who Brian Turner is. Brian Turner is the own Priority Records.
Okay.
When I first started, the name of the company was Priority Records, and his label was Priority Records.
So oh my God! I know who that is. Oh my.
But you had to you had to work around the name and.
Yeah, but we knew each other, so I'm at an event with him, and he says, Nat, you got to change the name of your label. I said, no, you have to change the name of your label. He said, I was first. I said, no, I was first. So I called my lawyer.
Wow!
Went for a trademark. He went for a trademark. So you know he got his trademark 2 days before me? So then I changed it to First Party Music.
And, I mean, but it worked in your favor. I mean.
It worked in my favor, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, wow, this is like great music history. Today it's First Priority Media now, right?
Yeah, we have a film called Top Villain, which is in two parts. It starts from me and Tribeca, then it goes into the music, and we go through the artists. And the second part is all about the artists, like putting in what she wants. Everybody's putting in what they felt. So we actually are doing films. We're working on projects right now. We're getting all that together. So we're doing a lot of, you know, we're doing music and we're doing film, not Hollywood film, streaming.
Like documentaries.
Like Netflix and, yeah, documentaries, things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not trying to do those major $100 million things, no.
Yeah, yeah.
Much more.
So I was reading, you have four new artists on the roster right now. You have Corey Anthony, Ari, JNR, and I-47, right?
Yes, I-47 is Black's brother.
Okay.
You know, Six Flags, they say Six Flags.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Black. Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's his brother. And we have a few others lined up also. We have a group which is three white guys, triplets. And they're like pop. Well, they're like pop rock. And we have one of my partners is a rock guy. And we're working on that also. And they're just great guys and, you know, just doing their music. And we're working on them also. And, you know, just putting it all together now. We're in negotiation with a couple of major places. And one of the places I'm looking at, I have my publishing at. I have to give Sylvia a call also. I haven't done that yet. And we'll see what we do, what we can do with the new stuff, because it's all amazing. We've been working on, I would say, about 8 months just the development of these kids. These kids, we did not take them because of metrics. We took them because they just are amazing. And we said, we'll develop it. If you're a major label, you won't understand that right now, but there's about four or five people that are doing that now, like L.A. Reid and like Barry Weiss and Neil Levine. We're realizing, let's do what we feel. Let's don't look at the metrics. But see, I go in, I got staff. They go in and look at the metrics, and yes, they have real metrics, but you look in there, you'll see people from South America that just, you know, they got two followers, and they put one thing out, and there's only, they're not real. You can buy those.
Mm-hmm.
So you may have 10 million, maybe 5, 6 million is real, and the rest is manipulated. So, hey, we're not going that way. We're going to go old school and say, we feel this, it touches us, let's work with this person. And we'll see what happens.
And you were saying earlier, which was something that you did with Light, you kind of follow the lead of the artist and you adjust the marketing, you know, to who they are and not into making them, you know, what you think or what the industry wants them to be. I think those are typically the most successful artists are the ones where the labels and management kind of lets them, you know, express their independence and just be who they are. And they work with it. Like the first example is always the first example I have is just Uptown. Like anything Andre did with Uptown is he's letting the artists be who they are and, you know, just giving them a little money to be who they are. With the new artists on your roster is something you're still practicing. You're letting them be who they are and you're just following what they're doing.
We're following their lead, and it can. There's a guy, I don't know if you know Rich Nice. Rich Nice is part of I was down in Curacao, and Rich was there, and I went backstage to see Common was there, and Robert Dick and Brian McKnight. Everybody was hanging out. Pete Rock. So I go back. Mm-hmm. It's the first time I met Common in my life, and he introduced me to Common. Common says, oh, Mr. Robinson, I got into hip-hop because of you, because of Survival of the Fittest from the Basement flavor. Great. And I got a chance to talk, and my wife was with me, and she started saying something to, and he looked at her and said, you don't know who this guy is, do you? This is my husband. Yeah, you just don't know his history. What do you mean? Because we weren't really married that long. And she said, yeah, what are you talking about? You do not know. And he started telling her about marketing, the marketing things we did in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Was so different than what the music business did. So we're still doing that, but not intentionally. You have to adjust the marketing to the artist, not have the artist adjust themselves to the marketing. So you really have to adjust your marketing. If IBM taught me nothing in my life, they taught me marketing. So, you know, some people would say, okay, artist, you got to sing like this. Don't curse. Of course, we're going to put you on this stage here. And you just change the artist.
Yeah.
You know, your bass might want them to curse, you know, or say, you know, screw that, you know, what if I hate that, you know, I don't like police brutality. Oh, nope. Don't say that.
Mm-hmm.
You got to take that out. Then you shouldn't have that artist. That's not the artist you should bring into your thing. You got to let, and if it's too over the top, and you want to blow up a whole block and kill everybody, that's not the artist I would take. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't adjust my marketing to that. I would say, no, that's a little too extreme for me. So I don't think we can partner on that one. But as long as it's within the realm of preaching, telling people what they experience in life, just things that you can accept, then I'm down. we are going to have to change our marketing to support what you're doing.
So, but I like what you said about, I like what you said, you know, if it's something that's too over the top, or if it's something where they're talking about something that you don't necessarily believe in, how you,
right.
you know, you say, let's pass on that. I think it, like, in the conversation, I think it's always one-sided where, you know, the label just has to adjust. They just have to let the artist be the artist. But there's also the opportunity for the label to pass if it's not something that they want to be representative of them, you know? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, we had, I'll tell you one thing, we had Milk had a song once, and in that song, being young and not understanding, he put, gay mothers get punched in the face. We had such, we had marches going up to Atlanta, changing the song to the reception desk. It was just insane. I had also a label at Virgin Records, and they're asking, well, how are you going to clear this up now? So Ice-T called Milk. He said, Milk, listen, you're a kid. It was on MTV everywhere. I'm like, oh.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you're a kid. You made a mistake. Just say you're sorry and apologize. And he did. And see, the thing is, I'm not homophobic. So, you know, I got friends and people that work in the music business. Everything chilled out. Everything was fine. So if you give me a song and you say you're going to hurt gay people, and I'm not gonna support you on that, and I'm not gonna have you put that music out through my label. I would never do that. You can't hurt people. You don't hurt anybody. You don't kill anybody.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like them, go your separate way, but you don't damage them and you don't hurt them. So, yes, I won't take everything. But I
and Milk is actually one of the few who actually apologized for lyrics like that. Like, a lot of artists did not and still won't do that. They stand by that. It's very interesting that Ice-T was the person to call him and give him that advice. So that's kind of dope.
He had some situation like that. What was he in? Was it the police or something? I hate them. I can't remember what it was.
But yeah, he was anti-police, and everything was anti-police for a long time. And then he made that apology, and now, like, he's been playing a detective for over 20 years, and he's like one of the highest paid.
22 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, that's power right there.
Okay,
22 years. He's been Detective Tutuola, Law and Order SVU. How different is it now, like with the influx of social media and the age of digital technology, marketing an artist, is it easier or is it harder? Like, a lot of people would think it's easier, but you're the professional, you're the expert. How different is it from the 80s versus now?
Here's what you have to do now. You can't go out, you know, budgets are ridiculous. You know mm-hmm. putting out radio and digital marketing, you know, you're talking $170,000 and up, you know, just to get the marketing in place.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do now, take 20 grand or 25 grand, you get the radios to start playing the music, and you check to see if it gets legs. If it gets legs, then you have to put the rest of the money in. If it hasn't gotten legs, you have to back off and say, okay, what did we do wrong? You just lost 25 grand, but what did we do wrong? So a lot of people just go with the money. Okay, we got the app. Put them out there, it's 200,000. Oh, nothing happened. The 200,000 is gone. I would never do that. You really have to see if the small radio stations are playing it. That the music has legs. It's building. It's not there, but it's building. And that tells you, okay, I have something here. I'll go to phase two. And that's just the way it is. But that's not because of digital marketing today. That's how I was taught to understand marketing. Period, from IBO. Mm-hmm. So you have to see, put it out slow, see how the public responds to your ad or whatever you're doing. And if they respond in some town in Wisconsin, you say, wow, let's try it in Ohio. Oh, it got a little legs in Ohio. You try four or five places, you say, okay, it's getting legs. Let me go with a full phase two of the campaign. that's just marketing 101. It doesn't make a difference if it's digital, if it's, you know, organic. It's just marketing 101.
So you do it in
phases.
You
gotta get out there and feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like I said, that didn't come from music business. That came from IBM. Because I was an engineer, but then I went into marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you learn those things that you gotta just throw a little bit out there. Go to a tough territory. It's almost like people that are doing polling, you know. You're just polling in different areas.
Right.
But, yeah, because, you know, you do deal with demographics.
You go to definitely.
County where, you know, you say, well, this is 80% Caucasians. Let's put this mm-hmm. on here. Oh, the 20% ethnic people here, it didn't get legs.
Right.
Okay, that's not. Yeah, you just got to do that. You got to do your work. It's like planning a battle, planning an assault in the military, you know?
And this is going to be my last question. We talk a lot on this show about the responsibility of artists to educate and teach their fans about those that came before them, about, you know, music. And I know earlier you were saying how you're watching this YouTube series where this kid didn't even know who MC Light was. And
right.
But thought Roughneck was dope, you know, like right. 20 years too late.
20 years too late, dude. The kid was
yeah.
late.
He's gonna make it one day.
Like, what? So, I guess my question to you is, what do you think we can do to bridge that gap so you don't have an entire generation out here who doesn't know who MC Light is, or they don't know who Frankie Beverly and Maze are, or they don't know who the Teenagers or the Dells are,
Motown crew.
Or Motown, like, they don't know Smokey Robinson, they don't know Martha Reeves, like, they don't know the Vandellas, right.
You haven't mentioned you don't have mentioned one I don't know. I know them all.
Right, you got them all. But it's like, there are people who don't know any of this. They take their cultural cues from social media and the internet and, you know, what they see and what they hear, but they don't know anything earlier than maybe the year 2000 or maybe the year 1990. What is something that, like, we can do or the people can do or artists can do to, like, bridge that gap, that generational gap in music?
Well, do you know who Premium Pete is?
Premium Pete, yeah.
Yeah, he used to be with Combat Jack, or Combat Jack Bat.
Mm-hmm. Rest in peace to Combat Jack.
Have you ever heard of Sean Williams?
Sean Williams, no.
Sean Williams, Clark Kent.
Well, yeah, I know DJ Clark Kent, yeah.
These guys are all sneakerheads. Now, mm-hmm. what's going on right now, there's a vinyl rush going on right now.
Yeah.
What's my girl's name? Adele. Adele mm-hmm. pressed vinyl. In London right now, vinyl is being rebirth of vinyl.
Right. It's like the top selling right now.
Right. You have the Japanese and the Caucasians that are vinyl fans. They buy every vinyl there is. But they mm-hmm. also are sneakerheads. And the vinyl and the sneakerheads goes together. And the vinyl is basically nostalgia stuff.
Right.
So you're getting a lot of kids that are into the sneakerhead type of situation that are also into the vinyl. I had a guy that just came in. I just saw him the other day on Instagram. He's out in Abu Dhabi with Paul Rosenthal, because, you know, Eminem did a big show out there in Abu Dhabi last week. He came to New York. I've known him for years. I know him when he used to live in London. He's in Dubai now. He came to New York. He says, Nat, I have every first party, I'm only missing one. I said, one? Which one you're missing? He said, I'm missing this group called UB. I'm like, okay. UB, but we really never put UB out. They went to EMI and whatever. But he says, I want to have that record. I said, but we never put that record out. And he said, no, it's out. It's at auctions and it's not. What happened? We supplied the distributors. And the distributors put that record out before we had pulled it back.
Mm.
But they had already started distributing before the day we told them they were supposed to be distributed. So it did get into the system. So I brought him, my wife actually brought him a record. We had lunch. She brought him one of the wax records or vinyl records. And he said, you don't understand what you did. This is like Christmas and every holiday wrapped in to whatever. And I said, okay, so we're leaving. I said, okay, I got the bill. No, you can't pay the bill. No, this is a big thing. I got it. No, I have to pay for it. I will not even tell you what the bill was. It was so ridiculous. It was unbelievable. He said, I have to do this. He said, I've been to auctions and people would outbid me to get that record. You know, so, hey, he got the record, he enjoyed it, and hey, that's what's happening now. They're sneaker collectors and they're doing vinyl. You know, they're manufacturing big time now, the 45.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sitting in an apartment full of vinyl right now. I DJ only vinyl, so I know, like, the resurgence right now is real. No, you're talking to the right person. You're talking to the right people.
Okay,
it's real.
I was about to say, I got like a whole room dedicated to
yeah, I mean, you're on the right show.
It's like my sanctuary. Like,
you and I are, we are music heads. That's why she started Soul Savinus. But it's interesting that you say that, like you mentioned sneakers and how they go hand in hand. And you talk about like the Caucasians and the Asians. Who are just diving into the culture, but they technically may know more than a lot of us who aren't there yet. Like, we haven't heard this, or we don't know who a Mickey Howard is, or we don't know who the Sequence is. You know, we don't know anything about Sylvia Robinson. It's like that.
Sylvia Rohn.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Sylvia Rohn. It's that gap where people are just lost, and it's something that we do talk about on this show a lot, because it's something, and I can't speak for Kewlin, I'm sure it's a yes for her too, but it's something that frustrates me as a music head, like as someone who you know, grew up in it and who thinks that they have, you know, a pretty decent knowledge of everything going on. But I mean, coming from I'm going to call you a record man. I like Clarence Avant, Andre Harrell, you, L.A. Reid, you're record men. Like, you understand the full scope of the business, and you make the impossible happen out of, like, what most people would consider nothing. Like, you have an idea, and you run with it until that idea is at the top of the charts. So I'm just going to say thank you for, you know, the knowledge that you're dropping right now. Like, you can't buy this knowledge. For all the listeners, you cannot buy the knowledge that you're hearing right now on the Soul Savinus radio show.
Well, let me tell you something that I really appreciate. I appreciate the question that you asked. How do we get these young kids to know history? And vinyl is going to do it. Now, all these Asian and Caucasians, they're collectors. It's like coin collectors.
Right,
every piece of vinyl they can get their hands on. They might not even be DJing, but there's a lot of DJs too, I know. A lot of them are DJs.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're going to that 45. They're DJing with the 45.
Yeah.
That's the new thing that's happening now. So that will help. I go sometimes when I have time, I go to schools, I go to colleges, I go to high schools, and we talk about stuff. You know, they invite me, and I do that. I don't have that much time, but I do it whenever I have time. But what I would like to tell the kids out there, if they have something, send it to our IG, communicate with us. You can just go right to @FirstPriorityMusic. Our people always get back to you. They'll get back to you. They will. It may take them a week or two, but they'll get back to you. Either way. And I like what you guys are doing, because that's part of our history. It's part of our Black history, and we've had a few Caucasian guys like Marshall or Eminem that really worked it. And these kids should really know that history is a part of America. I was going to tell you something, but I didn't want to hurt your feelings. But I'm going to say this. I know a guy that was in a studio. He was working with some young kids. They played some music, some mumble rap for him. He said, yeah, I know that's your thing, but I'm going to play the baddest rapper there ever was. And we know who that was. Your partner already said it. He put on Rakim. Do you know the kids looked at him and told him, that's whack.
What?
I almost fell on the floor.
Rakim, he's going to be here tomorrow in New York. Like, what?
Yeah. I said, but this is just a kid. This is not, you know, people. This is just one kid in the studio.
Okay.
But I don't think he was saying it was whack because he didn't like it. I think he was defending his music that he played first.
Right.
You know. And he had to say something because this was so much on another level than what he had at the moment, you know.
Wow.
But anytime, guys, I love, you know, interacting with you guys. Anytime, give me a call if anything you need. I'm open. I love to see the generations grow. I love to see kids grow. I love to see them get great jobs. I love to see them make money. Because that's something I have the pleasure of seeing that my mother and my father didn't. But I see it. So it feels good.
Oh, my goodness.
I love it.
I literally have, like 18 more questions. But I know you got to go. Because, listen.
No, I'm here. I'm at home right now.
Right. No, I'm saying that this is, like, you're part of, like hip-hop history in different fronts in terms of being a main artist on an album and then also the label side of it. Those two worlds are so different, and I feel like when you actually know the music, when you create the music, it makes it, like with even saying, like L.A. Reid, like, he's a musician, a drummer, and for him to have that, he had to have that musician perspective to be like, okay, this is the record for, you know, the proof to produce that many artists. And what I'm saying with Babyface as well. And so, man, like, when I tell you, Audio 2, the first album, like, legit, like, when you talk about the samples, like, Top Billing being, like, the, like, 200 the plus samples, like, it's literally, like, when you look at the I would say, like, a good portion of mid-90s was Top Billing samples. Like, I'm talking about, like, the West Coast rap. Like, mostly I heard it in the West Coast rap, because the thing with me was, when I started listening to soul music, it was, like, sort of that, when it started being sampled into the music, that's what I would go back to. And so, your record, like, it's, like, way across, like, 3-6 Mafia, you got the Eastsiders, you got Dre,
you got the Looney,
Dr. Dre, right? Looney, I got five on it. Like, and it was, you know, it's still in movie trailers, like the Us movie, the director by Jordan Peele that just came out earlier this year. Like, it was like the movie trailer soundtrack, and that's part of that.
Right.
And he remixed it and chopped it up to, you know what I mean, to make it more scary and, you know what I mean, to the listeners, but. Like, when I tell you, because I'm a musician as well, like, I play, you know, multiple instruments, and when I tell you listening to that drum machine, it's like, I don't know what y'all were using during there, but it was so strong, it felt like it was like real drums. Like, when I hear, what is it, when the two is on the mic, that drum is like, that kick is so heavy. It's like, what was that like doing that, producing those records together? What was that process?
Well, I'll tell you, this is going to sound crazy, but it's real as real could be. Milk Giz had no training in any type of audio equipment. But it came from the heart, and it came from the soul. You know, I had to actually get people to come in and try to show them how to use stuff. They were doing it from what they felt. Top Billing was done on a foot sampler.
Oh, you know? My goodness. Wow.
And it was recorded on a Tascam 246 cassette recorder.
Wow.
It was only done on a four track, so you had to bounce everything. So, and everybody told me, there's no way you could do that. Well, hey, he did it. You know, can I tell
you? And that's what I'm saying. It's like little stuff like that. Like when you hear, when I hear Too Short, like his early albums, like that's what I reference that back to. It's like audio, like I feel like, okay, G-Funk, we talk about, people talk about that, but it's like, when you get to like the real records, like I would say Audio 2, like was, in terms of the West Coast influence, it was a lot of West Coast artists using, you know, y'all first, the first Audio 2 album, they were using that.
Right.
Those drums in there. It's,
right.
Man, that's wild. And so.
Yeah, go ahead. No, I want to hear what you're saying.
No, I was saying that those programming there, what was it in particular? Was it just, was it like not so just off the cuff, like, okay, y'all got the beats or whatever, y'all made the beats or whatever. How, what was that process with like creating those sounds? Did y'all have like a particular sound y'all were going for, or was y'all just using whatever programming that was on the equipment y'all were using?
They were going for sound. What is that called now? What was the old, the SP-12? Was that?
SP-12, yes.
Right. Yes. They had just gotten their SP-12. You know? So they were happy. And they were playing with all. And there's a kid named Calvin Gaines. He's a really just an engineer. He knows everything. He actually did a lot of Lady Gaga stuff, too. He came in. They were all friends. And he came in and showed them how to manipulate that to get things out of that. Was not even told that the machine could do. It was nowhere in any directions or anything. So he would show them ways to get sounds that wasn't told to the buyer, you know. So they got crazy stuff out of it.
Oh, my goodness.
Crazy stuff.
And with the sample, one of my favorites one was Otis, definitely. And when Kanye said that one line, he's like, Jay is killing. What more
Jay
can I say?
Killing.
Like,
Jay,
that line.
Don't forget about him. Jay is killing. Jay is killing. What more can I say?
Wait. How did you feel about that when you heard that? Was that like, because it was like so many different, the way he chopped that up in there, it's like different stuff in there. How did you feel about that when you heard that?
Oh, loved it, you know. Anything that you can create and people, but they didn't copy it because they sent us paperwork. They're very business people. Everything was paperwork.
Right, 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 right.
Advanced, you know?
Right.
Anything that people would like to copy of yours is a compliment to you.
Right.
This thing, like, if somebody copies something, now, you know, yes, when we get into finance, it's a different thing. But when people emulate or imitate, anything that belongs to you, they duplicate, that's a compliment to you.
Wow.
So, as long as it doesn't take your money out of your pocket, it's okay.
Right. And so, well, I'm going to play this game with you real quick before you go. It's called the What's Wrong With You game. It's pretty fun. I make up the rules as I go. And so,
yep, it's rigged. The game is rigged.
It's okay. Not rigged at all. To the producer of the show, he doesn't know what he's talking about. It's not rigged at all.
Okay, let me see how quick I can get into it.
It's basically either or, and you just pick in what's the artist you listen to more of your playlist. That's basically the either or of this. And so the first one is Teddy Pendergrass or Marvin Gaye.
Can I say more?
Oh,
you put me on a bad one now. See, those are my top. They're my top two.
Oh, okay. That's what we like here. Okay.
It's like little tricks in this game. That's why I say I make them up as I go, because it just depends on your answer. You can answer any kind of way. It just which so you pick. So you have both of them on your playlist.
Those are my two. Those are my two favorite artists.
Okay,
both of them.
So
I can tell you every song of Teddy and every song of. Marvin.
Okay, so that's a bonus. Like I said, I make up the rules as I go, so you don't get a what's wrong with you on that. That's a bonus. Either way, you would have answered that, you would have got it right. So, you listen to both, that's fine. Okay, the next one is the Whispers or the OJs?
I would say the OJs.
Okay, you're talking right. Like I said, either way you went, you'd have been talking right. So, the next one is Prince or Rick James?
Prince.
There you go. Okay, this is where, like I said, I make up the rules as I go. So this part of the game, you have to get all these right.
and answer it specifically, or you get a what's wrong with you. And the first, okay. This one is Michael Jackson specific. Off the Wall or Thriller?
Off the Wall.
You talk, listen, ain't nothing wrong with you on that. You got bonus points off that. Okay, this one, I'm treading on this next one. Okay, Miss Aretha or Miss Patty?
I'm going to have to go with Aretha.
Yes. I knew you were going to say that. Yes. I knew it. Every time somebody goes off the wall, I think immediately Aretha. Okay.
Yeah.
You were supposed to say Patty, so, okay, name me three Aretha songs off the bat. Like you got 15 seconds. What's top three? Give me top three Aretha songs.
Respect, something about a man. I don't know.
You got 5 seconds. Countdown is happening.
Love of my man or something of my man.
Do right.
Okay, what's your reasoning behind, I just need to know, why do you play more Aretha on your playlist? More than Patty?
I love myself some Patty. But Aretha just was, she was out there longer.
Listen, this is pertaining to playlists, so let's keep it. So you have more, I just need clarification. So you got more Aretha songs.
He answered correctly.
This is the thing. When we get back with Aretha and Patty, I'm back to Teddy versus Marvin Gaye. I love both.
I just need clarification. So you have more Aretha songs on your playlist than Patty.
Yes.
Okay, I can accept that.
I pick more Aretha songs. Patty has a lot of songs, a lot of stuff, and I love all her stuff too. But Aretha just seems like she had more top hits.
Okay, you know what? I can accept that answer. I'm fair. Okay, it's not rigged because I'm fair in the game. So you don't get a what's wrong with you on that one, but you definitely get -12 because you're supposed to pick Patty. That's just the rules of the game. I'm sorry, Mr. Robinson. You don't get a what's wrong with you, you get a -12 points.
I told you, it's rigged.
The next one, it's not rigged at all. It's a perfect game. Okay. The next one is Babyface or Brian McKnight.
Babyface.
You're talking about ain't nothing wrong with you on that. Okay, I'm gonna make this a triple double round. I make the rules up as I go. This answer, I usually just do one thing, but now I need three. Since you're music industry professional, I need a professional of these. It's basically Mary J. Blige or Faith Evans, but I'm gonna do a trifecta. Okay, the first one is, who do you think had the best debut album? Mary or Faith, and then the second one is, who do you think has the best catalog, and three, who do you think had the best sophomore album? And just for clarification, the debut album of Faith was her self-titled, and then Mary's was What's the 411, and then their sophomore album, Faith was Keep the Faith, and then Mary's was,
My Life.
I'm losing my train of thought. My Life, yes.
Okay, guys, don't hate me, but here it goes. Mary, Mary, Mary.
I love you so much, Mr. Robinson.
Are you
serious?
Are
the best person in this world. Because you are, You are all the way right.
Mary, 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 are you serious?
Mr. Robinson is
the first one. Let me give you the real answers. Okay, the first one was Faith's debut album was supposed to be a Faith one, Catalog Mary, and the third one was supposed to be Mary. That's how that was supposed to go, but she didn't win all Mary across the board. And so, I don't know how to feel about this.
You did it right.
Okay. I conclude, okay, they had great, listen, you can't, also the debut album you're strong with, I can accept the last two, but the first one, come on, let's be clear here.
What's
411 versus Faith?
Number one, you got Grand Poobah in there, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
So you can't, you know, you can't.
You come from the
hip hop. My favorite rapper of all time, by the way, Grand Poobah.
No, I'm sorry. I'm just being honest, okay? We gotta lay out rhythm and blues strong. We gotta keep it real. We talking about the straight rhythm and blues. The face debut, that's equivalently like the winner. But the conclusion of the game is, there's nothing wrong with Nat Roberts, because he broke it down a little bit in there, and I like some of his answers when he threw the Grand Poobah card in there, so I have to give it to you.
You're taking me.
Okay, there's nothing wrong with Nat Roberts. There's nothing wrong with him. You won the game. I wasn't happy with the
happy with every answer. Every answer, even though Ms. Robinson didn't answer the first one.
Fan club is
I mean, listen.
Proud of your answer,
you got to hear this. This is why. Faith Evans was singing straight R&B music, where there's dozens of other people that sing that type. Mary came with a twist, something I've never heard before in my life. Sometimes you think she was going off, but she wasn't off. It was just something that
that's right.
You.
It goes back to what you were saying about the label letting the artist be the artist and they marketing the artist as the artist.
Exactly. Faith is a great singer, but there's 20 other people that sing great just like her.
No, they weren't stacking harmonies though. They wasn't, she was stacking her own harmonies.
Mr. Robinson
was
right. There's nothing wrong with them. This man.
And Pop was doing the same thing.
He's a professional and he knows what he's talking about.
Faith wasn't doing everything everybody else was doing. Faith had gospel harmonies. Nobody was doing gospel harmonies in the 90s.
Yeah, but we
were R&B records.
The music the kids was, everybody was listening to. Mary came out. She was just like, oh, my God. Even real love rock to your soul. Mary.
Love No Limit, Reminisce, Sweet Thing.
Reminisce.
My love, changes I've been going through.
We did a remix for Reminisce for her also.
No. Yeah, the Audio 2 remix.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, no.
Okay. That's the debatable thing to me. I get where you're coming from, but the hip hop, I'm just saying, like, Jody C did that first. I'm not going to go this far. I'll correct it. You got me on that. You trumped me on that one. Thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate
you guys made my evening. Y'all made my evening.
You made ours.
Y'all give it up right now for the legendary Nat Rock. Listen, this is hip-hop history, hip-hop legend that we're speaking to right now. I appreciate everything you contributed to musical history. I feel as though your imprint, you talk about wanting to be a songwriter. I feel like your imprint with Audio 2 and the different artists that you've helped along the way, and your music executive muse is definitely admirable. And I think hopefully people listening in can really just do your research on, you know, what this legendary human being we have on right now, because I'm just a fan of it, and just getting the history of it and getting a little pieces of how you created some of those records, like, you know, Audio 2, I was talking about their earlier debut album. It's like those records I listen to as a musician. My musician ear is always on, so those drums have always been like constant in my growth as a musician. So I appreciate you for dropping all these gems. And is there anything that in particular with the label that we should be looking out for, or any artists or anything project that you're working on we should be looking out for?
Well, we don't know exactly which one will be the first release, but we're gonna space it, and we're gonna give everybody a chance to just have their moment without being in a group of people. So each artist is going to be released separately, not together or not on top of each other. So we haven't decided how we're doing that yet, but we're getting on it. And I love the new music. I love the old music. I just love music, you know. And you said the OJs. You know why I said the OJs or the Whispers?
Yes.
I love music.
Thank you so much for coming on. Like I said, your physical legacy imprint is there.
and I appreciate it.
Keep in touch. Keep in touch.
Let me absolutely.
We'll put a television show together and
listen. Listen,
that's right.
I'm right there with you. We definitely gonna make that contact. Thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it. Legacy is on the show with us right now, and it's musical royalty, hip hop royalty. Like I said, Mr. Robson, we appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you guys too. I had a ball.
It was fun. And what we're going to do right now, we're going to go to break. And we're back into the 6 minutes of rain with Will Boogie. Right after this, we're going to be back.
Check it out. MCMI, people call me Milk. When I'm busting up a party, I feel no guilt. Gizmo's cutting up for the suckers that's down with me. The one of us, that's how I feel. To be down, you must appeal to the two. We're rated R, we're gifted, and we're going far down the road to the bank. While I'm here, I'd like to thank Mom and Dad, they knew the time. Gizmo scratching, Milk D's rhyming, Milk is chilling, Giz is chilling. What more can I say? Top villain, that's what we get. Got it good, since you understood. Would you stop scheming and looking hard? I got a great big bodyguard, so step up if you wanna get hurt. Milky's gonna pull this skirt. I get money, money I got. Stunts call me honey if they feel real hot. That's how it is, you can ask kids. I stole your girl while you were in prison. Jail for MC assault. You was jealous, it's all your fault. Milk is chillin', Giz is chillin'. What more can I say? Top billin', that's what we get. Got it good, and since you understood, would you clap your hands? Your hands, you clap. If your girl's out of place, it's your girl I slap. And if you're dumb, you ask why. I am from that do or die. The audio too, the two's audio. I got a brother and his name's Gizmo. Milk is chillin', Gizmo's chillin'. What more can I say? Top billing, that's what we get. Got it good, and since you understood, would you bite a rhyme if you dare? I get the paper so I don't care. My contributions to this jam is confusing because I am Milk D stated all the way. The super easy modest MC, okay. Yes, I'm down, down by law. I get the girlies out on the floor. G is D, down is G. Tuba at the top is where he'll be. At is us, call us on. Girls come in, you won't be bored. Milk is chillin', Gizmo's chillin'. What more can I say? Top billin', that's what we get. Got it good, and since you understood, would you do a dance? Dance the two. If you can dance, it's easy to do. This dance is on and on and on. Dance until your breath is gone. Be to the at the top is where he'll be. At is us, call us on. Girls come in, you won't be bored. Milk is chillin', Gizmo's chillin'. What more can I say? Top billin', that's what we get. Got it good, and since you understood, would you do a dance? Dance the two. If you can dance, it's easy to do. This dance is on and on and on. Dance until your breath is gone.
And we are back. This is the Soul Savage Show here on Studio W The Buzz, your global radio network. Hey, what a great interview, Q-Lan and EB.
Man, I don't even know how to feel right now. That shit was...
I mean, knowledge, like, he was just dropping knowledge.
Oh, my God.
Like an industry legend. Like, that's the kind of interview you're only going to hear right here on the Soul Savage Radio Show. So if you're listening, this is why you should tell a friend to tell a friend and continue to tune in because, I mean, the Soul Seven is radio show is where it's at. Like, what y'all doing?
That's right.
Listen, man, it's just, I don't know what it is, man. It's just, I think it's just treat people right, man, and then the right stuff will come to you. That's just how I see it because it's like,
Say that again.
All this happens, you treat people right, and then the right stuff will come to you, because that's all it is. Because I don't do anything but just say what I, the truth and the facts of what it is, or the music, and it's not even the what do you call it, the grandiose of it all, the praise, or I don't do it for none of that. It's just me just talking and just stuff that I've had in my head for like years, because some of this stuff, like, you can't Wikipedia it. It's just shit that, you know, I've watched stuff and then it's just there, and then, you know, I say it and then people react to it a certain way, and mostly the ones in the music industry and artists listen to the show and they listen for that, and it's like, I don't even realize it when I be speaking. I just be talking, like when EB talks about it, like I just be saying stuff that I'm pretty sure he's like had that information in his head forever, and that stuff's been in my head forever. So it's not even, and just my experience as a musician, that's just all it is. And it's just me putting time into the craft and for people to, like, hey man, I appreciate that. Y'all doing y'all thing, whatever. That's comforting to hear, but it's like, I don't even do it for that. It's just, you just have a goal of, okay, I want to talk about this. Let's talk about this and do that. And then it takes off. It's just a matter of your thoughts, like manifesting whatever that's beholden to you. And that's all it is. Like, I don't do anything out of the ordinary all this stuff to happen for the show. It's just like people listen and like it. And that's what it is. And it's just for like anybody that want to like, create your stuff and don't worry about like what's gonna come after that. Just put it out there. So if you got like a podcast, if you got anything you trying to create in any kind of industry you trying to be in, just put it out there. And that's all I'm doing. Like, it ain't nothing like I got like 50 people behind me that's pushing stuff. Like, no, it's just me just doing what I'm doing every week on Studio W Buzz, and then people are listening in. I promote it, and people like the guests we have on, and I just try to educate people through the stuff we do. But yeah, I appreciate that. Like, this is nuts that we had a legendary, not even just a music executive, but this guy's, like, history and hip-hop music is such, like, such a potent thing in the culture. Like, it's there. Like, I heard his, like, all audio tune samples, like, those samples, like, all throughout all the music I love. Like, from the east side of the west coast hip-hop, like, even 3-6 Mafia, like, it was in records, like, those little samples, and when he was talking about 50 Cent, I Get Money, like, that's all over that. Like, it's clear as day, and so it's, like, crazy when you have, like, people that have, like, been significant in musical history come on the show. It just blows my mind, but yeah, I ain't got no more to say. I'm kind of dumbfounded by it all. This is nuts. Wait, you got to say before we do 6 minutes of rain.
No, I mean, you said it all. Like, it's genuinely, it always feels like just an open and honest conversation here. It's not that we are fishing for information or that we're doing all these Wikipedia searches and everything. No, it's a genuine conversation. And the guests, I can tell that they always know when they're here, like, they're not just interviewing to interview. They know that, you know, they're here and we're having a deep conversation. No matter what the topic is, we're having a real conversation, and, they know that, yourself, Whitney and Will and myself, we're knowledgeable about what we're talking about. We're not just fluffing, you know, a whole bunch of BS and fluff. It's real, and I hope that the listeners appreciate it. I hope.
I think they do. I get it all the time. Like, when I post it on Instagram, they're like, yo, you doing it out here. And I was like, oh, it ain't even just that. It's just the appreciation that I have for it is, like, greater than any praise I'll get. Like, the appreciation, that's what keeps me doing it. Because if I do it for the praise, like, that shit is short-lived. Like, it happens. And, like, it's just that little moment. It's like, okay, people are paying attention. And then it's like, okay, what else? And it's like, I don't live off of that. It's like, any musician or entertainer we have on, like, it's like good, but it's like, okay, what more can we be doing? And it's like a full circle thing. But yeah, I won't get on that. We get on a whole thing. But yeah, man, that whole conversation, it just
blew my mind. It was like so many different things he was saying when he was talking about certain music executives and certain things that were happening. It's like, oh, I remember that. Like, I remember that time period. It was like certain things when he was talking about the promotional for MC Lyte's first album, talking about the groundwork that she laid. And that's like 89, like that's when hip hop was just, they were trying to like market it a certain way. You know what I mean? After Run DMC, all that stuff, you know, trying to get mainstream to catch on to it. It's like that whole history there, like he was giving lessons on that. Like, so those gems are crazy. But Will, you ready for your 6 minutes of rage, or are we doing it? I think we got a little time. I don't know. Oh, he ready. 6 minutes of rage.
You love
me. I know. But Will Boogie.
Oh yes. Hey, have you been watching the trial of Roger Rabbit? Roger Stone? Hey, the judge says, look, told the jury, do not watch any Godfather movies. Apparently there have been a lot of phrases in this trial about the Godfather. Huh, what is that all about? Oh, Trump still attacks the whistleblower. Now, these knuckleheads say, we need to know who the whistleblower is. We need to know that. I mean, you've got lefty Lindsey Graham running around. I'm not going to even read the transcripts. This is all HM. Well, look here, fool. How in the hell are you going to know what's going on if you don't read the transcripts? Oh, it's a farce. Yep, and so are you, my friend. Oh, yes. Oh, the lawyer for the whistleblower says, look, cease and desist, Orange Mushroom. All right. Orange Mushroom, small stem, cease and desist. You are putting my client in danger. Do you know the ramification behind that if something happens? GOP, oh, they lost in Kentucky, yeah, the other night, in Virginia. Oh, they flipped the seats in the cabinet. That's exactly right. Come on. Well, you know, Mississippi is Mississippi, all right. Oh, the Mushroom lost 2 court cases here recently this week. Oh, the judge told him today, get this. No, you know that money, that charity, that phony charity that you set up? You and your 3 eldest children? Guess what? You're going to have to pay $2 million. Just lost that today. Yep, absolutely. Oh, there's a whole host of other cases there. Hey, remember that writer, Jean Carroll? Oh, yeah, she said Trump raped her back in the 90s. Oh, that case is going forward. Also, that Apprentice star, Summer Zervos, said that, yep, this guy is guilty, along about 15 other 20 women. Can't wait for it to go down. Unfortunately, 9 people killed in Mexico this week. And, man, I believe 6 of those were children. That's a tragedy. That's a shame. Well, Lefty Lindsey, he does it again. Giuliani, oh, my God. Folks, if you have kids, don't name them Igor. Okay, you know Lev and Igor. Oh, my goodness. Those are people that you want to hang out with, right? Or invite over for Christmas or Thanksgiving dinner. Oh, it sounds like somebody is singing. Oh, my goodness. Rudy, boy. You know, you talk, you're about as dumb as a damn rock. You talk yourself into this one. You know, yep. Kanye West. Oh, he's a stricter parent, according to Kim Kardashian. Says since he has embraced Christianity, he's a stricter parent. Okay, all right. I will not be going to church. No tithes and offerings here, Kanye. The Texas shooter found incompetent. You know, he killed 10 people. Found incompetent to stand trial. I wonder what's going on there. This sounds really shaky. He wasn't too incompetent to pull the trigger, was he? Oh, no, not at all. Oh, my God. Gooseneck. Oh, boy. Gooseneck will be heading up the Senate, obviously. He's the Senate Majority Leader. And they will be conducting the trial because 45 is definitely going to be impeached by the House. Now, whether he gets convicted in the Senate, that's a whole different story. We don't know about that. And usually because when you got swamp rats on your side like Bill Barr and Mike Pompeo and Cockeyed Pence, man, you got a problem on your hand, don't you? All right. I would say so. All right. Now, impeach by Christmas. That is what the House is saying, that they could impeach this guy by. Oh, no. What happened? All right, we'll be right back with them. Oh, Q Lynn, EV just dropped off. I'll tell you what, we're gonna play the music and we'll be right back. That's right, we're back. Absolutely. Hey, didn't I say, oh yeah, that's right. Draining the swamp. Now, you don't have to worry about when you got swamp rats on your side, like Bill Ball, Mike Pompeo, like I said, and Cockeyed Pence. And then you got Gooseneck McConnell too. Oh, you don't have to worry about it. Oh, hey, woman, check this guy out. A woman, I think this happened right here in California too, wrecked her Mercedes Benz trying to cut the line to get a Popeye's chicken sandwich. Come on, it can't be that good. She cut the line. She wrecked her car. She scraped her car on the driver's side against, on the passenger side against the pole. And on the right side, she clipped another customer. And guess what? Popeye's told her, nope. Guess what? You can't even get your sandwich there. Okay, you cut the line. You cause a disturbance out here. All of that and no chicken sandwich. Oh, my goodness. Hey, did you know also a man in Maryland got killed? He got stabbed for cutting the line inside of a store? Oh, yes. They're still, the stabber is still on the loose with his sandwich in hand. All right. All right. I shouldn't do that. Okay. T.I. takes his daughter, 18-year-old daughter, to the gynecologist every year. She's 18 now to make sure that she's still a virgin. Okay, hey, that's my 6 minutes of rage, folks. Back to you, EB and Q Lynn.
I was gonna say, in that, there's some, voting that took place Tuesday, local elections. Shout out to all I told you Kentucky, I think lieutenant governors in the Virginia, and, I think they still, those places are still Republican, they still have those seats, but, the governor, they lost that one in Kentucky. That one guy still won't concede the race. Like, I feel like that's what's gonna happen with Trump. I feel like I keep saying it, like, I don't think he gonna leave whatever the 2020 election comes. I feel like he gonna do the same thing. I don't think he gonna concede either. He's going to do the same stuff. But yeah,
right, he's not.
Kentucky and Virginia, right.
Yeah, did you see what he said the other night? Did you see what he said the other night? He says, okay, well, let's see, we're going to do this again. We're going to get elected again. It'll be 5 years. Then he said, might be 9 years. It might be 13 years. It might be 17 years. Or it might be 21 years if I still have the energy. He does not want to leave that White House. And see, the thing about it also, he got his little clan, these groups there, they're gearing up, you know, and so they might be even revolt. If this guy gets, after he loses, because I thoroughly believe that he's going to lose. I'm serious about that.
That's what I don't understand about them. Like, I do know that technology exists now, so people can see your face and look up your social media and at your regular job or whatever you work at. And if they say your ass gonna be fired, try to start a revolt or whatever it is, whatever y'all try to do. Like, these races that be out here, like, People, it don't take much for you. Keep that up if you want to, see if you have a job Monday. That's all I'm saying. He ain't doing nothing but what they always try to do in that party is to scare people into vote for them, and people ain't falling for that shit. As you can see, what happened, these majority, these, in Philly too, it's a county in Philly that's always been majority Republican, and now they have the majority of the Democratic votes that happened on Tuesday. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, most of these cities and towns, like, I would just sum up, like I keep saying about the 2016 election, like, nobody liked Hillary. The fact people were trying to make that the equivalent of them being the same person was stupid to me. And that is the only reason why people didn't vote. And now people be like, oh, well, I guess we should have voted. Like, no shit, you should have voted in 2016. And now people, now the ones that are coming of age to vote now, that's making a difference, because there's actual, people try to act like they don't trust the polls, but the polls were showing the favorite. It wasn't that Hillary wasn't favored in the states that she needed that had the most electoral colleges. It said that at the end, but people was ignoring that. It was like, oh, the early voting and all that shit. I think that what's happening now, everything's about to turn blue and going into the election. I don't think he has a shot. And it's more this impeachment inquiry happening, more of that in the news. People are going to be more inclined to not vote, well, not vote for Trump or whatever, I think, but that's just my opinion. But we're in the Soul Savage radio show. You mentioned, I guess we can say that for next week. I was going to talk about the T.I. thing, but I think we can wait till next week to talk about that. Because we get to Raggedy or Savvy News this week. But yeah, thank you for tuning in. The Soul Savage radio, thank you again to Mr. Nat Robinson for coming on, music executive, professional. Thank him for coming on, and also hip hop legend. Thank him for coming on, and DJ Gizmo. Appreciate that. And,
Democrats, continue.
So Democrats what? Cut you off.
Man, did we lose EB?
Yeah. I think he would say Democrats keep voting. I think that's what he would say if he was on. Thank
absolutely.
Y'all for tuning in. Soul Savage Radio, people, and Trump, comb your hair. That's my savvy.
Mine is
comb that wet squirrel on top of your head. That's my savvy. He's a cop.
Mine is hey, stay away from the mushrooms.
Mushroom 45. We out, y'all.
Yes, coming up. You got Mr. Melody here. We're trying to get it organized here. We're gonna get it going. Hold on to your hat.